that you can relate to and be in practice with. Again, thank you so much. And please, please, please find it in your heart to donate to KBOO. This drive means everything to keep us on air. And thanks for listening.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.
And once again, you can find Rachel's contact info in the show notes at kboo.org. Or for counseling, you can email Rachel Allen directly at Rachel, RachelAllen counseling at gmail.com. Don't forget that extra A in Rachel. And thank you again so much for listening to All My Greatest Teachers Showed Me Love. Have a beautiful day.
Raise the vibration, save the generation. Airing out the ball, embrace the ventilation. Every soul that wakes, know it's a celebration. Good things is on the way now. Going different places, seeing different faces. We can't lose the hope, this life is what you make it. All the highs and lows, no, we just gon' embrace them. Existence is amazing.
Had to take a look inside with my spirit as the guide. Dreams collide as we rise from the surface to the sky. Drop a dose, now my body just a host. Holy ghost, switch perspectives through the DMT. Smoke entity woke, work hard and made it happen. All it took was love and passion. Now we speak heat like a dragon. And I've only made a fraction on this planet. Hard to manage when you righteously damage. World in panic, cause the system wants to take you advantage. Chakras beam when I free my mind. Y'all can't compete when it
be. You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Cable Community Radio's annual meeting and board election will be held on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios in North Portland. At the annual meeting, members will have the opportunity to meet candidates running in the board election. Final votes will be cast and counted. The results of the elections will be announced at the end of the meeting. Online boarding is open now through the annual meeting at kbo.fm/board25. Paper ballots will be sent to members by mail. Again, that's KBO's annual meeting and board election on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios, located at 3939 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbo.fm/board25.
KBOO's loud and proud. Become a member during our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots, independent, radically made community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give and help us reach our $45,000 goal. Thank you.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 11 a.m. It's time for the bike show.
You can ride in the rain. It takes two pedals, two wheels and a chain. Everybody, ride your bicycle. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody.
Hello and welcome to the KBO Radio Bike Show, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon on 90.7 FM and streaming live on kboo.fm. My name is Alon Robb, and I will be joined today by my co-host, Nedra Deadweiler, and our engineer, as always, is Ty Walker. Thank you, our listeners, for joining us today. And a special greeting to my neighbor and friend, my wonderful neighbor and friend, Jean, who's listening while she's getting a pedicure. And I think that's the first time in the history of the bike show that a pedicure has been part of it, and maybe in the history of community radio. And also a special greeting to two four-legged family members, Lori and Gino Nugget Bartali, whose ears might be pricked when, or raised when they hear their names. We are happy to be carried by fellow community radio stations across the land, including Radio Tacoma and KRC Radio of Corvallis, Oregon, where our show is aired every other Sunday at noon. The station, streaming at krcfm.com, is, in its own words, free-form local radio dedicated to playing great music and building community. In these days of genocide, suffering, rising fascism, ecological destruction, and I'm trying not to be too depressing today, we are fortunate to have stations like KABU, KRC, and Radio Tacoma, voices of sanity, truth-telling, community, and hope. And please consider donating to KABU with the merciless attack on the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. It has affected KABU also, as 10% of our budget comes from that. So please consider giving to KABU, and there's information on the website. Today we will go to Toronto, Canada, and also Tacoma, Washington, and speak with two individuals who help make their cities better places for all. In the first half of the show, Nedra will speak with Becky Katz, a manager in the City of Toronto's Transportation Services Operations and Maintenance Section, overseeing a team of 70 staff responsible for the upkeep and winter maintenance of the city sidewalks, bikeways, and roads. In the second half, our guest will be Leon Nettles, Executive Director of Tacoma's Second Cycle, which is, as its website declares, a community advocacy organization disguised as a bike shop, and whose vision is, and I quote again, a world where the joy of bike riding is accessible to everybody. Before we speak to our guests, a warm hello to co-host Nedra Deadweiler. Nedra, are you on the line?
I'm here. How are you, Alon?
I'm okay, and you sound as if you're in the studio, even though you're thousands of miles away. So how are things with you? How's your life been lately?
You know, I'm loving the weather right now, and everything really is predicated on the weather, because so much more is possible when it's cooler outside.
And you're in Atlanta, where...
I'm in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. And you've been...
Where it's been really hot.
Yeah, and you've been busy with various lectures and participation in conferences. Can you mention maybe some of those?
Soon we'll be going to Chicago for a conference, Shared Mobility Summit. And so it's like an unconference, and it's a Skillshare, and we're talking about, shared mobility and how does that work. So that's probably the latest one, and I'm really excited because I love Chicago.
Okay, and I hope that the Army or the ICE people stay away from Chicago while you're there and always. So, stay on the line. I'm going to read a few news items, and then you could take it over. So, that was Nedra Deadweiler, co-host, who's in Atlanta and is a longtime community and bicycle activist, and has done much good in the world and continues to do. So we'll move to a few news items, one from Portland. Portland city official decided recently to remove traffic diverters in Northwest Portland and change traffic flow on two neighborhood greenways. The diverters at Northwest 20th and Everett and Northwest 15th and Johnson were installed in October 2020 after a multi-year planning process, and over the past 5 years have reduced crashes in the area by 66%. Once the planned removal became known, it was vigorously opposed by residents, bicycle advocacy groups, several city council members, the city's bicycle advisory committee, the city's pedestrian advisory committee. All were troubled by the lack of transparency in the decision-making process and by the city ignoring the diverter's proven effectiveness. Responding to the public opposition, Mayor Wilson reversed the initial decision. So hooray for that, and as somebody who rides on that area daily, I could attest to their usefulness. And another item, which might seem pretty obvious to anybody who rides a bike, but this is from the wonderful Momentum magazine. An article is titled, "The Happiest Cities in the World, Also Some of the Most Bicycle-Friendly." And it reports that the 2025 Happy City Index found that there's a close correlation between measures of urban happiness and the state of cycling. The index, created by the Institute for Quality of Life, which is based in London, evaluates cities across six key measures: citizens, governance, environment, economy, health, and mobility. And the cities that scored highest in overall happiness also scored impressively in mobility and environmental indicators. The winner, the number one, was Copenhagen, where bikes outnumber cars. Over 60% of the residents commute by bicycle daily. There are cycle superhighways, traffic lights, time for bike speed, and many other things. And it results over there in cleaner air, healthier and happier citizens. And other cities that ranked high on the list were Antwerp, Belgium, Zurich, Switzerland, and Singapore. In North America, the highest ranking city is Vancouver, British Columbia, and in the U.S., Minneapolis. What these cities have in common are governments that invest in transportation, in safe active transportation, infrastructure, and recognizing that cycling reduces stress, improves physical health, cuts emissions, and builds community. And those were just two news items from the world of bicycles. And it's time now for our first guest. So Nedra, the mic is in your capable hands.
Okay, that's great. Thank you, Alon, so much for the news. And thank you to our listeners for your presence and your support of KBOO Radio. We appreciate hearing bike news and what it takes to make cities more bikeable, places more bikeable and safe. Our first guest is Dick Katz. In 2015, she was the first chief bicycle officer in Atlanta, and now she is a manager in City of Toronto's Transportation Services Operations and Maintenance section, where she manages up to 70 people to maintain the city's multimodal network, including bikeways, sidewalks, and roads. She's a professor at University of Toronto, and she's a highly awarded woman in urbanism. Becky, it is so great, and I'm so delighted to have you here on KBOO Radio. Welcome on.
Thank you so much. It's so lovely to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's been a minute. I try to keep up with you on LinkedIn. You are busy, busy, busy out there. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing great. The weather is also beautiful in Toronto as we transition to fall and prepare for our winter already. There's already snow talk in the hallways.
Wow, I can only imagine.
Atlanta weather.
Yeah, that's a big jump. I'm just gonna ask you this question about the transition to winter in Toronto. Does that include biking, and what is that for you right now? What does that mean for you and your team?
Yeah, sure. So I oversaw a cycling design and delivery team both in Atlanta and Toronto for about 11 years of my career. And then about 8 months ago, I joined operations and maintenance division, basically to continue to spread the love and understanding of the importance of, active transportation in our holistic network. And, traditionally our operations and maintenance teams haven't always attracted folks with the same level of expertise as I have. And so as we transition into winter, although we're still a few months away, it does include getting all of our equipment ready. In Toronto, we have more than 1,400 pieces of equipment that keep all of our infrastructure, including our sidewalks, all of our bikeways, whether they're on-street painted bike lanes, protected cycle tracks, or multi-use trails, and our streets clear of snow. We get a range of snow in Toronto. Not every year is dramatic, but last year we definitely had a fairly significant amount of snowfall. So there is definitely a lot of work and preparation for staff to know what beats they're driving, what equipment is going where, make sure all of our GPS is working, and really prepare for the large communications campaign that providing winter service is.
Wow, incredible. That is a lot of massive. So yes, I see why a team of 70 or more is needed to get all of that done. So I'm really impressed, you know, just with the trajectory of everything that you're doing. When you finished college, did you imagine yourself to be this involved in moving people through cities?
Absolutely not. I had no idea what I wanted to do. I studied civil and environmental engineering, and I worked on a water resourcing project that took a bottom-up community design lens with a Native American community in Northern California that had repurchased some land. And I knew that I didn't love engineering in its traditional sense, but I loved engaging with communities about how they can be empowered to shape the world that we live in, the actual built realm. And that's what I really loved. And I actually moved to Atlanta for a guy, which I said I would never do, but I mean, he's my husband, so I guess it was worth it. But I didn't know what I wanted to do when I moved to Atlanta so he could pursue his PhD. But then I found this great parks organization called Park Pride, and they did bottom-up park design. And I secured a position there, and I did community engagement and park design and planning. And I kind of just had a general interest in cycling. And something that's so amazing about Atlanta is that when you have a general interest in cycling, there's such an amazing community of people who also have that interest. And that's actually through light advocacy is how I ended up becoming more interested in the design of our streets and how to use cycling as a way to empower communities and shape our built form.
Okay, so that is a process, listening to communities and what they need. I mean, more access, water, number one, we need that to survive. Nature also does a lot to help us survive in the world. And so working in parks, doing community engagement. What is something about community engagement that you continue to take with you as you have moved through your career?
I think for me, it's about how do you meet people where they are. I think often community engagement is viewed through a very specific lens of you host a public meeting and you get, you know, a handful of people there and, you know, you run through a design charrette and that's that. But I think community engagement, true community engagement is, especially as a public sector employee, is a trust-building process where building relationships, building understanding, and living with some level of messiness is so, so important, especially if you are trying to make change. That and understanding also what is engagement versus what is providing a platform for people who already have a regular platform. And a lot of times I think community engagement can end up just exasperating, providing additional platforms for people who already have platforms. And so really meeting communities where they are. And broadening engagement strategies. And like, honestly, just loving it is, I think, needs to be part of the job to do it, with true positive results.
I love that. Just the idea of elevating the voice and concerns of others and their needs and and trying to give it an honest support and some, putting some care around that. And more of that is needed in everything, in every area. I'm wondering, you know, when you became the first chief bicycle officer here in Atlanta, Atlanta Magazine talked about your daily commute and your Kona honky tonk. Are you still riding the honky tonk, or are you on something else these days?
I still have the honky tonk, although I don't ride it as regularly. You know, when I started to cycle in Atlanta, it was actually very limited cycling infrastructure. To bike a lot on pretty aggressive streets. And so the honky tonk was great because it has a bit of a more aggressive frame. I could go pretty fast. But in Toronto, it's a bit flatter and, you know, have today we have a strong cycling network. So now I ride a Simcoe, which is a Toronto-made bike. It's an upright, more, you know, casual riding. But I still do ride my honky-tonk for longer rides and, you know, for occasional cycling for sport.
Oh, I love that. Leisurely riding to work.
I also have to say we have had large bike share expansions, including with e-bikes. And so I do find myself, treating myself some mornings to an e-bike ride on our bike share system, which is great.
Yeah, so tell us more about your bike share system and just your connected network. I mean, we have a network here and it still is connecting, you know, each part of it. But I'm wondering, you know, I've been in other cities and places where the network is more connected. Can you tell us about the network in Toronto and what that means for who rides and how many people and, you know, give us a snapshot of that.
Yeah, and I've definitely seen Atlanta's cycling network grow in the years since I've left, and it's so amazing to see some of that work. In Toronto, we have about 800 kilometers of multi-use trails, on-street bike lanes, cycle tracks and neighborhood greenways, bike boulevards. Our downtown core is, I would say, fairly well connected at these day at this point. We've had a historic growth in our network in the past 6 years, including in 2022 was the most number of bikeways ever delivered in 1 year. What I love about Toronto's network is that it's the right infrastructure for the right streets. And so we have, you know, on big, more intimidating, higher volume, higher speed streets, we have protected cycle tracks. And then on local roads that are one way, we have contraflow bike lanes or traffic calming or traffic diversion. And then on other streets, we have multi-use trails. And something that I love about designing streets in Toronto is that specificity and the pleasure of working through designs that are specific to each of the streets they're on. You know, I commute all over the city now, and our suburban network is less robust. But we are chipping away at it. It's just that we have, you know, 7,000 kilometers of roads, you know, and 800 kilometers of bikeways. So we have a long way to go to have a fully connected network. But, you know, change takes time, and we are unwinding from years and years and years, hundreds of years of roadway investment. And it is really exciting to see how our network has developed and our beautiful trail system and our on-street network connected as it is today. And I can't wait to see it grow from there.
Yeah, congratulations. 800 kilometers sounds like a lot. One in seven, I guess, whatever that means.
Not bad.
Yeah. Okay, you're listening to KBOO Radio Bike Show, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon on 90.7 FM and streaming live on KBOO.FM. And we're talking with Becky Katz of Toronto, City of Toronto. So a little bit more about you. What was your first bicycle what did it look like, and can you share a fond memory?
Oh my God, my first bike. maybe I'll just tell you my first adult cycling experience. I went to Cornell University in Ithaca, New York, and Ithaca is really, really hilly. And in my senior year, I decided that I was going to bike to class. And I got a $25 Huffy from a friend. And I think I tried for 2 weeks. And every day, I just walked up the hill. So I actually gave up. And I did not ride anymore. And it was not until I moved to Atlanta after graduate school where I really became a regular rider. And that was because I moved to Atlanta with no car. And Atlanta is more spread out, and I need to get where I was going. And so cycling was the most affordable option for me, the easiest option. And it put me into my passion for creating streets that accommodate all users safely and, you know, and into cycling generally.
Okay, that's thanks for sharing that. That's a really good perspective of, like, you know, what sort of viewpoint you're looking at as you're in your work and you're doing what you do, engaging communities, but also having your own experiences around the ease of cycling, the difficulty, and what makes it more comfortable. So with the City of Toronto, you've managed both cycling pedestrian projects, and now you're managing operations and maintenance. Can you share, like, what is the synergy of those positions? What makes
it work? You know, what I find exciting about operations and maintenance is that, you know, there's a lot of attention around capital project delivery and design, right? Like, everybody loves a new project. But once a project is delivered, it's just a part of our existing network. And maintenance is the longest timeline of our existing infrastructure. And it is essential to ensure that people are safe, that people have civic pride, and that our network is functional for those who use it, right? And so, you know, a brand new project is only as good as its maintenance strategy. And so I really wanted to get that experience. Plus, I would say that traditionally operations and maintenance staff have not had a ton of expertise in active transportation, you know, maintenance practices. So it's been like a really fun synergy because my staff and my team and my colleagues in operations and maintenance are amazing wealth of information of how do you keep things in a state of repair that is safe and beautiful and works. But I come with experience of what is needed from for pedestrians, for people cycling, what are the things that they're thinking about? Because when you cycle your walk in a city, the level of attention to detail is much higher because you're much more vulnerable. And so, you know, really working through those strategies of ensuring our network is usable every day has been really, really fun and exciting. And it's different problem solving. So from a personal, professional lens, you know, it's one thing to design one corridor from this street to this street. Instead, now
bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy miércoles 3 de septiembre de...
interference.
Yeah, interference, the being at a distance. That's real. I mean, I appreciate you sharing that, Becky, because as we know, like, the maintenance and just is one of the biggest concerns when you're on a bike. I got maybe a few more questions before we hop off. And one is, like, we know that there are folks still going to planning school, engineering school, and will be coming into these roles around the world. What would you say to someone who's entering, you know, entering this role or these roles that you've served? And can you share something that will I guess, be meaningful to them for their leadership within a city, because it's not easy to do that work, work in a city and in a structure, and to convince people and to educate people. And can you talk about, like, how does it look to build up your leadership, to be in positions and to do transformative work?
I think for me, probably the two key pieces is, one is that relationships matter. People matter. We are humans, and there's, you know, the best way I found to be is to build strong relationships with people who have a wide variety of perspectives and opinions, and to treat those with respect where appropriate, and to really work across everybody to develop strong relationships. And I think that has helped me become a successful change maker, is that no change, especially no street change that has, you know, a lot of resistance or concerns, it can't be done by a singular person. And when you work on projects that change something, a lot of our systems are set up to maintain the status quo. And so by making this change, you actually make lots of other people's in the short term job or positions harder. And that's okay, it's worth it. But without those strong relationships, your own colleagues, your own friends, your own communities can actually have such immense concern without those relationships that it could, deter, the positive change you're trying to make. And then the other piece I would say is that to acknowledge that the work that we do is change, and us as humans have this thing that we don't like status quo, but we hate change just as much. And so I always approach this work from a lens that you actually need a strategy to work through that change. And it can't just be, this is the right decision. Even though you know it is, even though all the research and the data and, you know, the professional opinion is that this is right, it doesn't matter. You know, people have different perspectives and are concerned about the changes and how they'll impact them. And it's so important as part of our work to effectively communicate, to build those relationships, to build trust, and to have a strategy of change management. Because if you don't, and you just present data, and you just present the facts as is with no story, no understanding of why there could be concern or resistance about making change, most likely you're going to fail on the facts, right? The facts and data are not always enough. They're key parts of making change, but there is a softer, more emotional side of implementing projects. And I think that it's just as important as the technical side. And you can't just get by being really strong technically. You also need to understand people, understand how politics, and navigate that component with honesty, with transparency, and to build trust. Both with communities, with politicians, with your own colleagues. And you need that to be built in as part of your work if you really want to, transform, your city into a more walkable, cyclable, better place to live.
Wow. Thank you so much, Becky. It's good to hear your voice and have you to contribute today. Take care up in Toronto.
Yeah, thanks so much. It was great to talk.
Yes. Yes. You are listening to the KBOO Radio Bike Show, broadcasting live from Portland, Oregon, on the first Wednesday of every month on 90.7 FM and streaming on KBOO.fm. All shows going back to 2001 are archived on bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. We have been speaking with Becky Katz, a manager in the City of Toronto's Transportation Services Operations and Maintenance Section. Thank you for being on the show and for your good, good work and your crew that, that you have doing this. We will take a short musical break, and then we'll come back and co-host Alon Robb will speak with Leon Nettles, executive director of Tacoma's Second Cycle. The song we will hear is Bomba Estéreo Soy Yo. This is me.
Cuando te pegas fuerte, más profundo es el beat, ¿sí? Sigo bailando y escribiendo mis letras. Sigo cantando con las puertas abiertas. Atravesando por toda esta tierra. Y no hay que viajar tanto para encontrar la respuesta. Hey, no te preocupes si no te aprueban. Cuando te critiquen, tú solo di. Soy yo.
And that was Bombo Estéreo singing Soy Yo, This Is Me. And if you watch the YouTube video connected with the song, you will see a spirited girl moving through her city with courage and strength, and also riding her bicycle. You are listening to the KBOO Bicycle Show, broadcasting live from the studio in Southeast Portland and carried by fellow community radio stations, including Radio Tacoma. In the first half, Nedra spoke with Becky Katz of Toronto, and thank you, Nedra and Becky, for a wonderful interview and inspiring and wise words. In the second half, we will cross the continent and go to Tacoma, Washington, to speak with Leon Nettles, executive director of Second Cycle, a bike shop and community advocacy center whose many programs help make bicycles more available for all and become vehicles of personal and community empowerment. And Mr. Nettles has been a longtime community activist, including as the Major Taylor Field Coordinator for the Cascade Bicycle Club. He has also sailed across the Atlantic, and that's probably a topic for another show, and was also world champion of hard court bike polo. Good day, Leon Nettles, and welcome to the show.
Good day. Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure and an honor to speak to you. Before we get to cycling, your own cycling, the organization you head, for those of us who maybe the word Tacoma doesn't ring much of a bell, can you tell us a little bit about its history, maybe the layout of the land?
Sure, absolutely. Tacoma is where the rails met the sails. So it is a city located just south of Seattle. The big international airport is called SeaTac, TAC for Tacoma. And it was going to be probably the biggest West Coast city when that the sails met the rails was happening. So the railroad met the port of Tacoma, and that was where the ships could unload and then load onto to the trains and then get freight all over or freight onto the sailboats to travel. From there, Seattle kind of overtook Tacoma's with the tech boom, and then Tacoma became a really blue-collar city where we have the port and a lot of working-class people, families have established their home, and just like every West Coast city, it has had a lot of people moving to it thanks to the beautiful weather that we get, the fairly same as you all. It's quite nice here most of the year.
Mm. And how would you describe the city as far as cycling? Would you say it's a good place to ride? How would you compare it to other cities in Washington?
I really like cycling in Tacoma. Tacoma is, I'd say, it, for quite a long time, it was very car-centric. So the roads were built very wide to make it accommodating for cars. And I'd say very recently, there's been a heavy focus on building infrastructure for cyclists. And we are actually have a ribbon cutting ceremony for a neighborhood greenway just behind our shop. I'm looking at it right now as I speak to you. And it's connecting South Tacoma to North Tacoma. And they've been really working on connecting bicycle infrastructure. I think we're still a little bit behind a lot of the other cities in our region as far as cycling infrastructure goes, but we're working on it, and I'd say that we're headed in the right direction. And I enjoy riding here. We do have a fairly large hill to ride or to deal with from downtown to where we are up on Hilltop. So that is something that we get to ride every day if we're commuting around Tacoma. But I'd say the views of Commencement Bay and riding around Commencement Bay is one of the most beautiful places to ride a bike to commute around. Every day that I'm on my bike here, I'm always the breath is taken away from me almost every time that I'm out there just riding on my normal commute.
Mm. You make me want to come and ride uphill over there. Tacoma actually has a long history of cycling, and there's a interesting article by Rita Sapella in the Washington Encyclopedia, which you could find online, a really well-researched article about cycling in Washington, and she mentions Tacoma as a place that was cyclists were there from the 1890s, and at first it wasn't very welcoming, but it changed. It's a very well-written article called Cycling in Washington by Rita Sapella. I want to hear more about Tacoma, but first a little bit about yourself. What's your own bicycle origin story? Were you always a cyclist? Did you grow up in Tacoma?
No, I grew up on the East Coast, New York State. I went to college in SUNY Purchase, and that was when my bicycling story started. I got a job at a bike shop, and from there it kind of I fell in love with bikes. I moved out to the West Coast to Seattle after I graduated college, and I got a degree in environmental science. And I did not like doing environmental audits, which was what my degree kind of led me to. So I went back to the bike shop, and I worked for a bike shop in Seattle called Montlake Bike Shop. I worked with them for a number of years and got into bike polo while I was working at that bike shop. And that really took me around the world. I got to play in many different countries as well as all over the United States. After I left Montlake Bike Shop, I moved down to Tacoma, and I was missing the bike world, and so I took a job with the Major Taylor Project teaching high school students and middle school students that go to school in underserved communities. We basically chose the high schools that had the highest free and reduced lunch rates, and did a biking program where we took all of the barriers away from the students and got them into cycling. That culminated in July, where we took the kids on from Seattle to Portland ride, the annual ride that Cascade does. And that was very rewarding. I really enjoyed that work. And that's when I moved to Tacoma, I got involved with Second Cycle as a volunteer. And then through my work with Major Taylor Project, I ended up helping them develop their youth programs here. They were just a small group of anarchists, bike punks, who wanted to get more people on biking, and they had a lot of youth that would hang out in the bike shop, and so they wanted to do more for the youth, and so they started to create their own youth programming, and I helped them develop that back in 2016, and that, so that has all led me to eventually now the last 2 years I've been the executive director here at Second Cycle, and very excited to help lead what we do here with our organization.
And your path seems much more exciting than just doing environmental audits. I don't know what you were auditing, but it seems like this is a little bit more exciting. I want to hear about Second Cycle, but you mentioned bike polo. What exactly is bike polo? What skills are involved? What is the, is there like a World Cup for it?
Yeah, there is a world championship. It happens every other year now. Bicycle polo was started in the same kind of timeline as the bike scene of the history of biking in Washington State that you saw. So in the 1900s, bikes became very popular. And horse polo was also popular back then, and so people decided to start playing horse polo on bicycles, and that was the beginning of bike polo, but that's grass bike polo. And then if we fast forward to 2000s, 1998, I believe, there was a very large bicycle messenger scene in Seattle, Washington, and there was a bit of a crash around then, when they had hired a lot of messengers but didn't have a lot of work. So there was a lot of bike messengers standing around doing nothing. And one of them had heard of grass polo and decided to try it out in their kind of parking lot area where they all waited to get jobs. And so that was the beginning of hard court bike polo, which is what I played play. And it became popular through the bicycle messenger scene. They have a world championship, and that's where people learned about it. Was actually in Portland there was a world championship, and that got introduced to the world, and all the bike messengers took it back to their countries, and it just kind of took off from there. So you play, the way the game works is it's 3-on-3, was the original version. Now they have slightly different where it's teams, but I'm going to tell you in my heyday how it worked, which was in 2009, 3-on-3 on a smaller, about a tennis court sized court. You have goals. We played with cones. Now they have fabricated goals. It's just kind of like beautiful chaos of riding around, passing, kind of a combination of basketball and hockey. It is full contact, but now they have very defined rules of where you can contact the other players, and how you can check or hit other people to keep it safe so people aren't breaking bones every time. But you have a mallet they were made out of ski poles and ABS, kind of the plumbing piping, 2-inch plumbing piping you'd see in your home. But now there's companies that actually manufacture them and you can buy them, but they're pretty much made out of the same materials, just a little bit easier to put together.
Soccer is my sport, my passion, the sport I grew up with, written books about, play weekly, dream about, but you made bicycle polo appealing, so I might give it a try. We are speaking with Leo Nettles, Executive Director of Second Cycle, a bike shop and community advocacy center in Tacoma. So let's get to Second Cycle. You described its origin a little bit. How would you describe the vision, the purpose of Second Cycle, and what does it actually do?
Yeah, so we are a community cycle center. We're a nonprofit, a 501c3. Our vision is to demystify and normalize bike riding as a part of daily life and realize the bicycle as a tool for personal and community empowerment. And our mission is a world where the joy of bike riding is accessible to everyone. So that is, that has been what Second Cycle has been about since it's been established. It started, as I said, as a small group of bike punks in 2008, and then it was established as a nonprofit in 2011. And since then, it has grown quite a bit and has established itself as a necessary service for the community that we live in. Tacoma is a bit of a it's been revitalized quite a bit in, I'd say, the last 15 years. But when Second Cycle started, it was a city that was identified as needing help from federal government and the state government. It was kind of downtrodden. Tacoma and Spokane, has had a bad rap for a while, but the community is really what we're trying to serve and to teach and empower people to ride bikes and be comfortable working on their own bikes. Was what we originally established ourselves at. From there, we've grown quite a bit, and we have so many programs. If I told you all of them, I would probably run out of time. But to hit a few of them, one of our first programs that we that we've been doing for quite a while is an Earn a Bike, where we teach individuals how to take apart a bike down to its frame, and then we build it back up, and then they get to keep that bike. Right now, all of our programs that we offer outside of the bikes that we sell in our bike shop or the equipment that we sell in our bike shop are free to the members, to the individuals that come. All of our youth programming is free. We also have programming through our bike shop where we help community members who use the bike as their main source of transportation and can't afford to fix it. They'll bring it to us, and we will either help them learn how to fix it, or we will help them fix it themselves. There's also people who are trying to get themselves out of bad situations and don't have a form of transportation. So we do have a program called Pedal for the People, which we then give them a bike to help them have that transportation so they can get to where they need to go. Yeah,
and those sound wonderful. And I've also, looking at the website, which I encourage everyone to look at. And if you have it in your pocket, in your heart, to donate to Second Cycle, please do. But one thing that caught my eye was the Youth Court Diversion Program. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of our longest running programs. We've been So the Youth Court Diversion Program is something that we partner with the Pierce County Court Systems, and they run their own diversion program, which it partners with different organizations. We are one of them. So when a youth has a run-in with the law where they have done something that they should not have done, but it is not a dangerous or a crime where someone was hurt, a lot of kids do things that they regret. I know I did a handful of them myself growing up. Thankfully I did not have to go through any of that for my things that I did, but I digress. Sorry.
No, I won't ask for a list of those things you did. That's another topic, another time.
If they're going into the court system, rather than going into the court system and having a record, they can do a diversion program. So for us, in our case, what our diversion program is
currently is we've turned it into an earn a bike program. So basically, originally they used to come to us and do community service, and we would help. They would help us work on bikes or strip bikes. So a main part of our organization is we receive donated bikes. We take those donated bikes, we fix them up, and we sell them back into the community at a low cost. And the way that we're able to do that is by having a lot of volunteers help us with that. And so the diversion program, originally we just used them as help, and we'd teach them, you know, how to take apart a bike and how to put it back together. And that was the original thing. We have since then turned it into an earn a bike, where they come and take apart the bike, put the bike back together, and then we give them that bike in hopes that now they have another way to use the energy in a more positive way, as well as get themselves around their neighborhoods or hopefully out of the situations that they might get themselves into that could cause them to go into the system. So that's what we've turned it into. And we're very proud to be partners and do that work with the court system.
That sounds like a great program. And I could think of some real criminals in high places, including the White House, that after a long jail term, maybe could come through your program and earn a bike. So our time is just flying by really fast. And, you know, there are so many things I want to ask you about all the programs. But again, if for those of our listeners who are interested, please look at Second Cycle's website. You know, our previous guest, Becky Katz of Toronto, spoke of meeting people where they are, the importance of building relationships. I'm wondering, you know, what are some of the joys and challenges of running a cycling organization? Are there days that you say, the hell with it, I should be selling cars? Or how has the experience changed you, maybe?
Yeah, thank you for that question.
And we only have about 3 minutes, so, yeah.
Okay, I will try and keep it short, short and sweet. I love what I do. I think it is, I think it was my calling. Everything that I have done in my profession and my my personal life has led me to this position, and I really like the work that I'm doing. I think it's incredibly valuable, and I feel like I'm giving back to the community in a way that is meaningful. The difficulties, I'd say the hardest part in my position is the money aspect, right? I would love to give everyone a free bike. That would be awesome. And thanks to our state, we do have a program where we can help youth with that through the Washington State Department of Transportation and the Climate Commitment Act. We've partnered with Cascade Bicycle Club, and we have a youth program where we, in active transportation, we teach them how to safely ride, and we are able to give them a bike, which is awesome. But to be honest, you know, as many as we can do of that, it's not enough. So I think that is the struggle that I deal with on my daily life. And the only thing that I currently am wanting to do more and hit a wall where it's I can only do as much as I can do. Yeah. So that's the struggle that I live with, but I do love what I do.
And you do a lot, you and your staff. Maybe, you know, in the near future, after the socialist revolution, there'll be enough for bicycles instead of war and bailing out corporations and billionaires. One can dream, right? And hope. In 1 minute, and sorry for putting time limits, just, you know, what's next for you in the organization? Where do you see yourself, let's say, in 10 years?
Yeah, 10 years is a long way. I mean, that's, we've been around for 15 years. Mm-hmm. So, in 10 years, I hope to be, you know, an organization that is funded in the way that Cascade Bicycle Club is. And doing this similar work for the city of Tacoma and Pierce County, the South Sound, just helping individuals get on bikes and use bicycles as their main form of transportation.
Amen, amen. So we have been speaking with Leonardo, executive director of Second Cycle in Tacoma. And thank you so much, Leon, for being on the show, and more important, for the important and wonderful work you and your staff are doing. So all the best to you. You have been listening to the KBOO Bike Show, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon. My name is Alon Robb, and I would like to thank our guests Becky Katz and Leon Nettles, co-host Nedra Deadweiler, our engineer Ty Walker, and also Chris Smith and Josh Hetrick for making all shows available at www.bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. And a big thank you to you, of course, our listeners. You make this show possible. We appreciate you taking the time to listen. We appreciate your own cycling history and activity. So may your rides be safe, enlightening, and joyful.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 11:59 a.m.
This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy miércoles 13 de septiembre del 2025. La asociación